You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 82, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin, originating from Chicago, Illinois, and a proud member of the Comic Book Podcast Network. I'm your host, Tom Harris, and welcome! So as you folks may remember, for some time now I've been thinking about initiating a Radio Free Asgard drinking game. And there's been a number of reasons why I've been a little bit reluctant to do so, not the least of which is, A, I don't want to foster, you know, the irresponsible use of alcohol while listening to my show, though I imagine it'll help you get through some of the episodes. I know it certainly helps me get through recording them. Now, I would also make the point that, you know, if you play the drinking game, you don't need to actually drink alcohol. You can drink, you know, ketchup or orange juice or whatever the hell you drink. But also because I don't want to seem as though I'm copying another show that I greatly admire, that being the Legion of Substitute Podcasters, who have their own drinking game. But I think it's finally time, folks, and at the beginning of November, I put out some feelers over on the Radio Free Asgard Facebook group and began taking some suggestions as to, if we had a drinking game, what would we want to include in that? We had a number of really good suggestions from listeners, but I want to put it out there that if anybody else has any additional suggestions other than the ones I'm about to read off, that they should feel free to contact the show. Of course, you know, we have an email address, which is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com, and we also have the Radio Free Asgard Facebook group, so anybody can join and make the suggestions there. But this is a partial list. By all means, this is not exhaustive, but this is what we have so far. Take a drink whenever Odin changes clothes in the middle of a story. Take a drink whenever Thor stands in the middle of the street. Have to take a second drink if the street is completely empty of cars and people. Take a drink whenever there's an unintentional sexual innuendo. Take a drink whenever Thor whines. Take a drink whenever Jane Foster hits on a different guy. Take a drink whenever Odin is a dick. Take a drink whenever a character talks in logos. And take a drink whenever a tree is destroyed. Scott Coles also suggested drink for I verily. I think that if that was actually a drink, then all of you would die of alcohol poisoning. So I don't think that's really what they suggest, especially if you're going back to the Stan Lee stuff with the bad Shakespearean stuff. Anyway, so that's what we have so far. And I think I'm pretty solidly happy with those suggestions. And of course, if you have any others, feel free to suggest them. All right, so I really don't have much else going on this episode. So let's go ahead and continue on with Thor Volume 2. We're going to do this issue, and then we're going to take a little bit of a break because I'm actually going to start covering something new. When I say I'm going to be covering something new, I actually mean I'm going to be covering something new. As in Thor God of Thunder, the new series of Thor coming out. Yeah, I picked up the last couple of issues. I should say Pete picked them up for me. And I'm actually thinking that I'm going to start covering that regularly. And let's see how that goes. Anyway, so without any further ado, let's move on to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heaven.
So this week we are going to cover Thor Volume 2, Number 4, a.k.a. Thor Number 505, has a cover date of October of 1998, retail for $1.99, $2.80 in Canada. Yeah, the exchange rate at that point was pretty dire for the Canadian dollar. And this cover shows, incidentally, the cover is by Johnny Romita Jr., and it shows Thor flying up above New York City with both hands on his hammer. Take a drink And side by side is a pointy-eared guy with little teeny wings on his ankles, that being none other than Prince Namor the Submariner, or as the kids in my neighborhood growing up called him, the Submariner. Yes, I still find that amusing. Even today, I'm sure I called him the Submariner when I was a kid, too. But as I got older, I realized that, you know, it's Submariner. Anyway, if anybody out there still calls him the Submariner, they should write into the show. Anyway, so that is the cover. Nice cover, I say. You know, good job. This is something, it just strikes me as weird because Namor appears these huge, like, wrist things. And I remember him having, you know, like, sort of wrist gauntlet things before. But why would he have these just ginormous metal ones like he has in this issue? And he's got a belt, which actually looks a lot like Thor's belt. So it has an S on it and has little wings coming off the middle. I mean, it's like he copied Thor's belt. And it doesn't make any sense because Namor is a sea person. Why would he have wings on his belt? I don't know. Why does he have wings on his ankles? That doesn't make any sense to me either. Anyway, let's go into the issue. And of course, we have a little opening sequence here. I'm just going to go ahead and do the credits right away. Dan Jurgens was the writer of this book. John Romita Jr. was the penciler. Claus Johnson was the inker. Gregory Wright was the colorist. Richard Starkings was the letterer. Tom Brevoort was the editor. And Bob Harras was the editor-in-chief. And the name of the story is From the Ashes. I just wanted to put in a few words here about the artist of the series, John Romita Jr. Now, John Romita Jr. was the son of John Romita Sr., who was one of the iconic Marvel artists of the 1960s, of course, well known for his work on The Amazing Spider-Man, probably more than anything else. And then, of course, he stopped doing comics pretty much in the early 70s and became Marvel's art director. John Romita Jr. got his start in comics in the late 70s, first doing some work for Marvel UK, and then coming on board Iron Man as the regular artist. And he was being inked, I believe, on that series by, I think it was Bob Layton. He had a pretty good run on Iron Man. I mean, it wasn't, you know, continuous, but he did a lot of Iron Man between 1978 and 1991, which is pretty much one of the longest running things that he drew. He's also known, like his father, for his work on Spider-Man and also on the X-Men. And of course, he did a lot of other stuff, including the Hulk and Thor. He did not all of the first 25 issues of Thor Volume 2, but most of them. He certainly was the dominant artist, did quite a lot of X-Men comics, and he continues to work in comics today. Like his father, most of Romita Jr.'s work has been done for Marvel Comics. He really hasn't worked at DC at all, and most of the work that he's done that hasn't had anything to do with Marvel Comics has been for the Icon Press or Image, you know, to be like small projects like limited series or one-shots that are published by other publishers. He really is very much a Marvel artist and is very strongly identified with the Marvel characters. Anyhow, let's move then along to the story here. And the story opens up in the ruins of Asgard. You remember we saw that when Thor took Alan Moore into Asgard and things were all wrecked up and Thor got all mad and he hurled his hammer and he smashed up one of these big wrecked buildings in the ruins and something got loose. Well, we're about to find out what that is. But anyway, we see the remains of the Rainbow Bridge and the city of Asgard is all ruined. And we see the glow and the Kirby crackle kind of shining in the city. And we see a figure standing among the ruins, sort of shooting lightning out, like pink lightning out in all directions. And we have the caption, of course, says, "For eons it was perhaps the most beautiful city in all creation. Though few mortal eyes ever beheld its golden spires, Asgard became the stuff of myth and legend, a city of unequaled stature and significance, as symbolized by its rainbow bridge, a heavenly pathway to the gods. Then it pulsed with courage, nobility, and integrity. Now rebuilt in grotesque fashion from the ashes of pain and destruction, it reeks of evil, twisted morality, dark souls, and death." And we have a dark, shadowy figure, and he looks like he's carrying this big sort of, looks like a can opener, like one of those really old-fashioned can openers from the 1940s, but I guess it's supposed to be like a scythe. And we hear an evil voice says, "Join me, Advar. I would stand alone no more. And you see a close-up of this guy, and he looks like, I'll be honest, he looks like Pluto from Thor number 125. You remember? A long time ago. He has the same looking face as Pluto, and he has the same color scheme as Pluto. But anyway, we find out that this guy's name is Perichas. And this Adva, or Advil, or whatever her name is another being, and she's emerging from this lightning and Kirby Crackle and all that stuff. And I have to say, I still admire the way John Romita Jr. draws Kirby Crackle. It's pretty cool. And we have Advil. She says, Perichas, god of power, unlimited in energy, infinite. Long has it been since I've heard your voice. You have captured the last of the Asgardians, the son of Odin, Thor? And Perichas is like, no, the fool released me when he unwittingly hurled his hammer through my prison of the centuries, but he has yet to return. And I had to say, this Adva is, she's dressed in this sort of weird yellow and silver armor, and she's got like these big circles all over it, including like these great big huge ones on her boobies. And she has one hand, and the other hand is like a kind of a gun looking thing with a big spike on it, kind of cross between Tyr from the Legion of Superheroes and Wolverine, sort of that kind of thing. And I had to say, I mentioned that Perichas looks a lot like Pluto, but his armor looks a little bit like the armor of Terminus. If you remember this big, huge monster thing that Fantastic Four fought a few times. Adva continues, perhaps he's on the inconsequential dung heap they call Midgard. I have tried to sense his unique energy, but can find no trace of him there. He has either left or died. And we shift back to Earth, and we see where we left off last issue. Remember, Thor was being dragged down to the bottom of the Hudson River by the Inuit sea goddess Sedna. And we are there now, and she's dragging him down. He says, struggle not, my warrior. Once your lungs are filled with water, I shall use my sorcery to transform you into a suitable mate.
I say thee nay, witch. Ne'er, bloop, will the son of Odin, blip, surrender to the wiles of thee.
Yeah, he's going bloop. And they have a little caption explaining who Sedna is, and explaining who Thor is, which is kind of weird. And they're going deeper and deeper into the Hudson River, and we see like fish and stuff down here, which makes me think that in Marvel Universe, the Hudson River is not nearly as polluted as it is in the real universe. Sedna is continuing on her rant and says, if you are so powerful, you should be able to escape my grasp. Instead, you change into something almost insignificant and undetestable. And what has happened here, remember, Thor hurled his hammer at Sedna's sea monster, and the sea monster swallowed his hammer, and the hammer has not come back to him. So we have what's going on here, kind of this old Dr. Blake kind of situation, where if Thor doesn't put his hand on his hammer for a minute or so after he throws it, then he changes back to his mortal form. And so Thor has changed back into the form of Jake Olsen. And now Jake Olsen's underwater, and he's going bloop and being dragged down by Sedna. And he's thinking to himself, Sedna speaketh true. Seconds ago did I hurl my enchanted Uru hammer Mjolnir at her servant beast. That was that big eel thing from last issue. Now, as in the past, should Mjolnir abandon me too long, I revert to the mortal form of Jake Olsen. 'Tis inconceivable that the hammer hath not returned, for by Odin's will, ever must it do so. But 'twould seem the serpent hath swallowed it whole, weaving death to embrace me forevermore. And we see an arm reach out and grab Jake, and a voice saying, fear not, air breather. And it is the Submariner, and he's grabbed Jake Olsen away, is trying to drag him away from Sedna. And Sedna has him wrapped in these tendrils that she has that are kind of hanging off of her head. Some of them are coming out of her face, but some of them are like her hair. Namor actually recognizes Sedna, and he's like, you! Decades have fallen to memory since we last met, Sedna. I thought you dead. And she's like, Namor of Atlantis, the Thunder God, where is he? And she must be really stupid, because she saw him change. Anyway, I demand you return him at once, because clearly the Submariner stole Thor, right? No, she saw him change. Anyway, if you refer to Thor, I've not seen him, witch. These waters are my province. No one, least of all you, commands the Avenging Sun. And he's let go of Jake Olsen, and he's swimming up back towards the surface, and he's trying to get up to the surface as fast as he can. And he finally breaks the surface, and he says, "Yes! The hammer! For Thor to return, I must recover my enchanted hammer!" And underneath the water, the Submariner and Sedna are still fighting. All I can say is that this river is really, really deep. Which makes no sense. I'm sure the Hudson River cannot possibly be this deep. Because you not only do you have, you know, the Submariner and Sedna, and you have this huge eel creature who is truly enormous. And he's all stretched out, and it looks like the water is really, really deep here. Not to mention crystal clear. You would expect that this polluted river would be really cloudy, and you wouldn't be able to see 5 feet in front of you. You know, and Sedna's trying to grab onto the Submariner, but he breaks free. And he's like, "See how easily I escape your grasp? These warm waters obviously weaken you, Sedna. Not so much that I cannot handle you, Namor, just as I did so long ago. For this time, I did not come alone." And the sort of eely creature attacks Namor, wraps a big tendril around him, and goes, "Screech!" And Namor's like, "By Neptune!" Namor is not real impressed, even though he says, "Impressive! But I have encountered many impressive creatures, only to defeat each and every one." And now Sedna's like, "The human, where is he? And where is the warrior born, my consort to be?" Dude, you saw him change. You even commented on it. Sedna is really dumb. Anyway, so Jake Olsen is like, looks like he's dog paddling in the water. He's like, "Mjolnir would carve through the center of an entire planet to find its way to me. There isn't a force in the universe that can prevent it from returning to my hand, no matter where it lies. So why isn't it returning?" And the Submariner is being belted by this giant eely thing and strikes him with one of its tentacles with a giant chewed. Or chud, I guess it says. It would, you know, sound effects underwater doesn't make a lot of sense. But anyway, and we then shift scenes, and we have Hannah on the telephone. She's trying to track down Jake Olsen. Remember, Jake was supposed to pick up Amanda at school last issue, and because he was Thor fighting Sedna and this giant beastie thing, he didn't show up. So he's wondering what's going on. And Hannah, who just a couple hours ago told Demetrius that her boyfriend was still alive, is now calling him to find out if he's actually seen him. Demetrius is like, "No idea, Hannah. Isn't this the day he's supposed to pick up your daughter at school?"
"Whoa, you have a better grasp of Jake's schedule than he does. Jake and Amanda should have been here hours ago. To be honest, I'm getting worried."
"Just so happens I'm only a couple blocks from Mandy's school. You want I should check up on her?"
"Would you please?
Let me ask you a second, Hannah."
They cut to where Demetrius is, and he's taking money from some stranger in a car. Ooh, it's very ominous. And he's like, "Your money, nice job."
"I'm on my way now. If Mandy's around, I'll find her."
"Thank you, Demetrius. Jake's lucky to have you as a partner. Maybe I'll get lucky enough to understand why Jake's been acting so strange lately."
And she's hanging up the phone as she says that. And we then cut back to Jake in a shot that looks very much like a Gil Kane drawing, actually. And he's kind of treading water here in the river out loud.
"No matter how hard I concentrate, I can't will the change without my hammer."
And the giant eely thing is towering above Jake here and going, "Screech!" Jake's saying,
"And from the look of things, Thor'd be better off in this situation than me, than Jake, whatever."
And he decides to try to summon the hammer to him. And we've seen him do that before, remember, a long time ago. And also in the Simonson run, we've seen it happen.
"I call upon you for the last time, Mjolnir. You were forged by Almighty Odin himself to do my bidding."
No, it wasn't. It was made by fucking dwarves. Can you tell I'm a little frustrated about it?
"For some reason, ever since Marnot changed me, there have been times when you haven't responded. I say thee nay. In the name of Asgard, in the name of Odin, thy master commands you to return anon."
And you hear a screak from the, I think they're using the same sound effect. It's like they just photo-pasted the same sound effect. Yeah, I think it is. Anyway, we see the Mjolnir bursting out of the eely thing's stomach with a glutch. And it returns to Jake Olsen's hand, presumably to change him back into Thor. But we don't see that happen because we see Namor leaping out of the water and shouting, "Foul beast! Not even one such as you may lay waste to the son of the deep!" The Ely thing grabs Namor again with a critch, and he's like, "Impossible! Nothing so immense can move with such amazing speed!" And for some reason, the beast releases Namor, and he's kind of wondering why that is. And we see that Thor has grabbed a hold of the, grass, or, I don't know, it's not grass, it's a sort of, like, anemone tendrils or whatever that's sticking up off the Ely things. It's a mane. It looks like a mane, anyway. So he's grabbed this sea creature's mane, and he's dragging the sea creature into the air. Thor saying, "Knowest well that thou dost have the eternal gratitude of Thor, friend Namor. Without the aid of thee, 'tis most likely the sea witch would have transformed me into her aquatic mate. For that reason, this is a fight that is Thor's, and Thor's alone." And he hurls the sea creature away with a giant sploosh. And it doesn't look like he threw it very far, so I imagine, why wouldn't it not come back? And Sedna is flying up out of the water after him, and she's like, "Asgardian, come to me, godling. Look deep into my eyes and through them into my soul." And Thor is tempted to look at her, and he's saying, "Verily, I feel most wistful." And she's like, "Enjoy me for eternity."
My lady, thou art most alluring, and I am cast alone on this world."
So, we see the Sedna is dragged away from Thor by Namor, who basically is just cock-blocking Thor at this point. And he's like, "Step away, Avenger, lest you be lost to her evil ways for the rest of your life."
"Namor, you dare challenge the God of Thunder in relationships of the heart?"
I don't think that's what's going on here.
"Kiss her and you are lost, Thunder God. Sedna uses her siren-like song to attract surface dwellers and drag them beneath the sea, where they are never heard from again. Such is the fate that awaits you."
"May you be condemned to all the hells the seas might offer, Atlantean. If not for your interference, I would have claimed a consort finer than any I have never known, if it hadn't been for you meddling kids. And one day I shall. But for now, these warm waters have weakened me far too much, and I must depart until the day I return to claim Thor as my own."
Just what we need is another femme fatale who lusts after Thor. We had enough of that in the Silver Age, don't you think? Between, you know, Carnilla and the Enchantress and Jane Foster. Yeah, it's kind of, at this point, kind of overdone. But you know, I mean, Thor, I mean, why wouldn't you go to Submariner? I mean, he's like half naked. He's got little wings on his heels. Anyway, Thor is kind of hovering here in the air. It looks like he's using his hammer as a helicopter and hovering in the air. But that shouldn't work, at least not the way he's holding the hammer now. You'd think if he's holding it over his head, it would be a little bit better. So Sedna is gone, and Thor's mind is clearing, and he says, "Methinks my mind and will are solidified with her departure. Thou art a good and noble friend, Namor. Atlantis must thrive under thy tutelage."
"As you are fit to rule a kingdom, Avenger, losing you to one such as she would have been most regrettable."
"We be much alike, Prince of Atlantis. Nobles, alone in the company of man. Wouldst thou care to partake of a tankard of mead? To sing of past glories and revel in lost adventures upon the high seas? To discuss the ways of mortal man?"
Okay, so basically Thor is asking the Submariner out on a date.
"Not today, Avenger, for I am not at all alone. The affairs of Atlantis require my presence."
It's like, it's the Atlantean equivalent of, "No, sorry, I have to wash my hair."
"The surface dweller I saved. You took him to safety?"
"Ah, you refer to the one called Olsen. Aye, rescue him I did. Even now he doubtless rushes to the city in search of friend and family alike."
And we shift scenes here to the apartment of, I don't know if it's Jake's apartment or Hannah. I guess it's Hannah's apartment, though I don't really know. Anyway, it's Hannah and Amanda's there and Demetrius, and they're sitting around, and she's like,
"Dee, I can't thank you enough for bringing Amanda home. I can't believe Jake forgot her like that.
The guy's a creep if you ask me."
"She was smart going back in the school building like she did, but Jake goes solid as they come. He had a good reason for not showing. Count on it."
"Maybe, but my daughter needs a responsible adult she can count on, not one who has misplaced priorities."
"Yeah."
"That's enough, young lady. I know you feel betrayed, but we'll deal with it when..."
And at that point, Jake enters the room, and he's like, "Hi, everybody.
Got my picture pinned to the dartboard yet?
Jake Olsen, how could you? Since when do you cast young girls into the cruel streets alone?
Like every day.
I went to the school, but by the time I got there, Amanda was gone.
And that's because he was busy drowning in the river.
She's terrified, Jake, just as anyone would be after being hassled by gangbangers.
And Jake reacts badly. He's like,
this life, I am unaccustomed to its conditions and demands. Thou hast my apologies, m'lady.
And he goes running off, and Demetrius is like, what was that all about?
And what's with the Shakespeare bit?
Oh, Jake, let's talk this out, okay? If something's bothering you, tell me. Hey, why is the door to the roof access open? Jake, honey, are you up here?
And we can see what's happened up on the roof. Jake Olsen has changed into Thor here.
Nay, good woman, though I am sworn to stand in his stead, I am not, and never shall be, your love.
And Thor goes flying away. And Hannah bursts up to the roof and's like,
Jake, not here, but I could have sworn I heard his voice. Oh, Jake, what happened to you on the docks? What changed you?
And we then shift scenes to a city. It looks like an evil city because it looks very sinister indeed. And we have these super futuristic bug-like buildings here with like legs and stuff on them. And kind of reminds you a little bit of the like Kirby Asgard, but it is subtly different. And it definitely looks more dystopian future looking than sort of fanciful Asgardian sci-fi ish, but it definitely is very much influenced by Kirby, and I definitely see a lot of that in there. And we see a silhouetted character, and it looks like I don't really know what I'm looking at here, but it looks like somebody holding a scepter or something, and they're in silhouette, and there's this sort of horned thing, and I don't even know what we're looking at. But anyway, there's a cosmic voyeuroscope of sorts that this person is talking to. And it looks like a crystal stalagmite. And it's sort of this pocket in it where the like green hologram of Perichus and Adva are talking to whoever this is here. And you hear a voice,
the fallen city, Perichus. How go the preparations? Adva, master of the Continuum Gateway, continues to move materials here. Within hours, Asgard shall be ready for the arrival of the Brethren, as well as you, Magistan Zelia.
And we see the next page is a full-page spread of the Magistan Zelia, and this woman who looks like a relatively normal human body, but she's got this big, huge face mask. It covers her entire face, except for her lips and one eye. So in kind of a way, it's kind of a weird version of Odin in kind of a really kind of twisted way. And she's sitting on a throne and she's got a cup in her hand. You can see that this is part of what was silhouetted. And now we're actually looking at her from the front as though we're looking out of the cosmic voyeuroscope at her. And she looks pretty evil. I don't like the headdress. And I'll talk about this at the end when I talk about my commentary here. But she's got this sort of red energy crackling off of her headpiece and like red Kirby crackle coming up. And she says,
then cease your prattling and quicken this pace, Perichus. Though you be my son, you'll not be spared my wrath if Asgard is not ready for occupation on the morrow.
And we hear a voice coming from beyond her and just shouting at her. It's like,
base villain, thou speakest of wrath when thou knowest not the meaning of the term. Indeed, thou shalt yet kneel before me, lest thee wish to be the subject of wrath and anger unbounded.
I spit at the hollow words of a monarch fallen. Do you not realize your words are empty, Odin?
And we see that Odin is trapped in this sort of giant machine thing. And he's got like this metal harness on and there's big chains attached to it. And it looks like he's being forced to pull back continuously on these chains, and there's like these big pulleys, and there's this big heavy weight above his head and big spikes on it, and it's like if he lets go then he'll get crushed by it. So kind of a ingenious looking trap, very very cool looking stuff. But Odin doesn't look too happy, and somehow he regrew an eye. You remember back in the Simonson era, Odin only had one eye? When did he regrow it? I don't really know. Anyway, he has two eyes here. And Odin is kind of trapped here looks like he's pretty much helpless. And we get a little bit of exposition here. The Lord of the Realm Eternal does not answer. Throughout his long and storied life, his commands have ignited battles bathed in glory, while his regal whispers have delivered peace and forbearance. Benevolence and favor are his to grant, while discipline and honor are tools used to preserve the noble status his sovereign subjects enjoy. His victories far outnumber his few defeats, and even those eventually resulted in triumph. But never before has he been so beaten, so crushed. Never before did anyone dare think Odin, the All-Father, would be chained in humiliation and shame. And, he's kind of tied up, and he's just wearing a loincloth, and, yeah, Odin's not. And we then shift scenes one last time, and according to the caption, we are on the coast of Maine, and we're actually at a bar called the Merry Peddler, which seems a little weird. And so there's these rough-looking characters hanging out in there, kind of, you know, sailors and longshoremen, that sort of thing, fishermen probably, and kind of lowlife hanging around in the bar. And sitting amongst them at a table is Thor. And he's drinking, I assume, beer, because they don't serve meat at places like this, out of this really fancy-looking Asgardian tankard here. You have a little bit of exposition here. Worlds away on the rocky coast of Maine, a most unusual sight can be seen in a most unlikely place, where tales of the seas are traded in a boisterous fashion, and the company of friends. Some are skeptical. Most listen in rapt attention, too engrossed in stories of sea serpents and courageous battles to wonder why a god sits in their midst. As the hours and sagas stretch past closing, as angry wives wait for their men to come home, the truth does not occur to even one of them, that even a warrior born, an avenger, a god, cast into a new life without brother or comrade of youth, can be lonely. And that is Thor number 4, also known as Thor number 506. Just a few things to say about this. I think the series has taken off at this point. I really do. Now, there's a couple things that bother me a little bit. And I talked about this. I touched on it, at least. I'm not sure how much I really talked about it. It seems to me that this series is, I don't know, maybe overly dependent on guest stars. For example, we had the Avengers in the first two issues. We had the Submariner in this issue. We had the Fantastic Four coming up. We have Hercules coming up. We have Spider-Man coming up. There's a lot of guest stars going on. I don't know why they're doing that. Doesn't seem to me that Thor really needs that. Maybe they're trying to, you know, boost the entire line, get as much exposure, cross, you know, make it seem more like a continuous universe, and that there's actually, you know, a real world where people know each other and stuff. But it seems to me to be a little bit too much. And it's because it seems like, you know, out of these four issues, three of them have had a guest star. And only last issue really didn't. And, you know, there's more to come, which makes me a little wary about this. Now, I'm really liking the art for the most part. Some of it is still a little bit sketchy and 90-ish, but for the most part, I really, really like it. Now, there's a few things I don't like, and I kind of touched that on already. The shapes of some of the people's faces is a little weird, particularly Jake Olsen. He has this face that's shaped like a shoehorn. And I don't know how else to describe it. It's kind of a concave face. It's kind of weird. Some of the costuming, you know, the designs of these evil gods who've taken over Asgard since it got, you know, cast into ruin. They have these very 90s designs that have not stood up well. They're very sort of Rob Liefeld-ish, or I don't know. I don't know if I'd say Rob Liefeld-ish. That might be too deep an insult, maybe. But they definitely are extreme 90s type of costumes. And very, I don't know, how would you say it? They're not very practical. So, you know, I guess this is just kind of a remnant of what was going on in the 90s, where everything was covered in spikes or, you know, and of course, that all started with Jack Kirby, too. I mean, you have the cumbersome headdresses and that sort of thing. But, you know, even with characters like Sedna, who really doesn't wear much of a costume. She's got these bizarre metal shoulder things, which seem completely unnecessary. But that's the sort of thing that I'm talking about. So why would she want to wear something like this when she's a sea goddess? And, you know, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Namor and his winged belt, which is another weird thing in here, but I'm assuming that Johnny Romita Jr. didn't actually invent Namor's winged belt. But
I like in the story, I think this is interesting, the idea that, okay, well, you know, Asgard's been defeated, and now these other evil gods are taking it over. And Thor is actually responsible for freeing one of them with his hammer. Yeah, that raises the stakes a little bit. Obviously, Thor is going to have to come and deal with these people. And, you know, what's happened to the rest of the Asgardians? We don't know. Now we know that Odin's alive. I'm guessing that there's other Asgardians alive, too. And I have not read ahead, folks, so I don't know what's coming. But I'm assuming that by the end of this story, we're going to at least have most of the Asgardians back in play. Though, you know, who knows? I mean, like I said, I haven't read. All right, so with that being said, a few bits of the art, I particularly like the whole trap thing that Odin is stuck in. I really like it. I mean, Odin, you know, even though he's trapped in this thing, he looks really powerful. I mean, he's a fat guy, but he's got these big bulgy muscles and stuff. I like the way it looks. It's sort of like Santa Claus bondage. but I mean, not that that really does it for me, but anyway, that is kind of what it looks like. I like the way that Johnny Romita Jr. draws the Submariner, but I think he makes him look a little bit too young. I know that different artists draw him different ways. I kind of liked when John Byrne was doing his Namor series. I didn't really like most of that series, but I liked the fact that Byrne drew Namor as being a little bit bulkier and more mature looking, as opposed to the sort of thin, boyish Namor that we had back in the Invaders series. And indeed here, I mean, we had very much the kind of boyish looking Namor here, as opposed to the sort of older Namor that I've been accustomed to seeing, even in 90s Marvel. But generally speaking, I do really enjoy Johnny Romita Jr.'s art. Like I was saying, the layout, they have one particular page 9, where Jake Olsen is in the water and he's screaming for Mjolnir and summoning Mjolnir to himself. Very effective use of zooming in on him as he's calling his hammer to him. I really, really like that. Yeah, and some of the other things I don't really care for. I don't like the kind of dated look that some of the clothes have. It's very, very much, you know, mid-90s sort of preppy clothes that, like, people like Jake Olsen's girlfriend, Hannah, are wearing. When you try to be timely and you try to draw people the way they actually looked during the era, it doesn't age well. For the same reason that you don't see people wearing parachute pants and dealy boppers today. Because it just would look silly. And it's like, what are you, stuck in the 80s? And yeah, and that's just one of those things that, when you look at old comics, it kind of stands out. Unlike, really, the 1960s stuff, where people just kind of looked generic. There wasn't anybody who was dressed in a very mod fashion. Though, if you did show, like flower children and the love beads and all that stuff, yeah, that would look weird, too. All right, so with that, I think that just about finished here. Now, next week, like I said, we are going to be covering Thor, God of Thunder, #1. Which is published last month. Now, the #2 just came out, but we're going to be covering the first issue next time and something else. Not sure whether we're going to go back to the 60s or whether we're going to pick up on the Simonson run, but I do want to talk about Thor, God of Thunder next week, and I promise you we're going to have a longer show as opposed to the kind of shorter ones that we've had recently. And of course, you know that one of the reasons why I'm doing that is because these new comics, they take no time at all to go through. But they are awfully nice to look at. Anyway, I do have a lot to say about that. So hopefully you'll tune in next week. And we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard.